Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Mike, we have a new Ring of Honor pure champion in Daniel Garcia beating Wheeler Yuta in the main event, but we'll get to that story. Certainly not the top news of the show today, given all that's happened since Sunday. So I'll just throw to you on this first. How do you think AEW as a company did tonight in terms of kind of resetting after having to suspend the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and a host of others due to fight backstage after the All Out media scrum Sunday night with CM Punk. CM Punk not there tonight either, and stripped of the title or not champion anymore due to injury. We haven't got official word on Punk's status with AEW yet, but regardless, you know, this tonight's show was a reset in a really, really big way. I mean, you had, you know, four of your top stars in the company just now not around, brand new championships in the trios titles vacated after 3 days, Punk champion again in AEW, but, you know, unable to fulfill, you know, that commitment, just, you know, a mess. And so, you know, you had to kind of start from scratch and rebuild some things. And they leaned clearly into, you know, their tried and true guys, Chris Jericho, John Moxley in particular, Danielson, MJF, of course. So I'm a little bit mixed. I'm mixed on it overall. But Mike, your take on just them getting through this show and setting up, you know, the next kind of era of the company.
Yeah, you know, I thought they did a pretty good job of kind of boiling it down and just making it as simple as possible, which with everything going on, Tony probably had to do. You know, we've all talked about how much he does on his own. He's running a wrestling company. He's running a Premier League team. He has a role in helping run the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, there's a lot going on, and this week even more so, there was a lot of stuff, obviously, since Sunday night that demanded his time that he probably didn't think was going to be demanding much of his time. He probably figured, you know, since Sunday night, he probably would have been, you know, looking ahead and booking this show on Wednesday and not dealing with the fallout of everything that happened after the show. So I thought they did a pretty good job of, as far as just making this show kind of as simple as possible, making it all about, with the exception of really the women's match, almost every segment on the show was about a championship, and even the women's match had the interim champion involved. So you had, you know, the main event with the ROH Pure title. You had the trios champions being crowned. You had the first match in what is now going to be an AEW World Title tournament. Everything kind of focused on the titles, and they, for the most part, kept it in the ring, with the exception of the promo at the very, very beginning of the show. So I thought they did a pretty good job, and in considering everything Tony was probably dealing with over the last 48 hours, you know, I thought they did it. I thought they handled it well.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you kind of have to analyze this whole show through the lens of, you know, Tony Khan and the company is navigating something here that's almost unprecedented. You know, in terms of timing and guys, this is happening with that are tip-top stars and champions in the company. So, I mean, obviously there's been, you know, scuffles backstage and fights and politics and whatnot, but, you know, to come at this exact time, I think is, you know, significant and obviously, you know, threw a curveball into things. I'm with you on a couple of points. I like the fact that tonight, you know, was focused on wrestling, focused on the championships. I think, you know, in recent months, AEW, really since the MJF thing, but even before that, you know, they have been kind of dipping their toe into this like meta backstage storyline stuff. And, you know, for better or worse, tonight I know that if you were an AEW fan that didn't have any idea that any of this stuff happened on Sunday after the All Out pay-per-view event, you're kind of wondering like, okay, wait a minute, what happened to CM Punk and what happened to the Young Bucks? And so I'm here for that argument, you know, make something up, right? That said, you know, I'm glad they didn't have MJF come out there and kind of just cut this meta promo on Punk and on the Young Bucks and on Kenny Omega. I'm glad, you know, I'm sure we'll get a Max Caster rap at some point, but I don't think tonight was the spot because, you know, you wanted to just reestablish what the company is about. And, you know, that very much is, or should be anyway, championships, winning. And I thought that was the focal point of tonight. And so I'm high on that. I'm also really high on Jon Moxley's promo after he took over from MJF. It's like that guy has really been there for Tony Khan in some, you know, awful circumstances when you think about it, back to being champion during the pandemic. And then, you know, you have this big crowning moment of CM Punk as champion at Double or Nothing, and he goes down, you know, the next show, and who steps up? Okay, it's Moxley. And now, you know, you have this big scuffle, this fight, you know, your top stars are gone. Moxley's there, you know, kind of giving the, not a rah-rah speech, but a Jon Moxley style rah-rah speech that I thought set the tone, Mike, for the show tonight in terms of framing up that championship as a really big deal and as a tough thing to secure, and, you know, him talking about kind of climbing up that mountain again. So I really loved that promo. I thought it was well-timed. I thought he was the right guy to give it. What was your take on Moxley?
I thought it was great. Yeah, and I thought, you know, he said something, and I wouldn't do it justice to even trying to paraphrase it, but he said something to the effect of, like, you know, it's he wanted the championship. He explained why he wanted the championship, and he also said, you know, I think he even said at some point, like, that's my championship and it's my locker room or something like that. Like, he made some sort of reference to himself and leading the locker room in a kind of a vague way, but in enough of a way that it did kind of feel like a message to, not, I don't think to anyone in particular backstage or to Tony or anybody else. I think it was a message to fans that, hey, even if these top guys are gone, I'm still here. And, you know, there's still a lot of big name guys in the company and guys that they're building that will eventually be there as well. But, like, this is still a company that has Jon Moxley, and it still has Bryan Danielson, and it still has Chris Jericho. Like, they still have, even with these guys suspended and gone, and who knows who may not be back ever, we don't know, but there's still a lot of marketable names here, and I kind of feel like that's what Moxley was trying to reiterate. Like, yeah, you know, this isn't about one guy or four guys. This is about this whole company, and this is what we're fighting for. We're fighting for this title, and the passion was off the charts. And I think it's an interesting scenario that he finds himself in yet again, like you said, where it's almost like, from Tony Khan's standpoint, it's almost been like, you know, Jon Moxley has been there in case of emergency in multiple scenarios, in multiple different instances. And here he is yet again, you know, in case of emergency, break open glass and go with Jon Moxley, and they could do it again here. And at some point, you know, given the fact that his title reign really came in front of no people, and maybe now is the time, but like, it does feel like he is owed some sort of long title run with people in the building that can react to what it is that he's doing. Cause he didn't get it the first time around.
He didn't. And he didn't really get it. I mean, he kind of got it the second time around, but it was, you know, it was in this interim fashion, and it was designed, I think, to, you know, heat him up just enough to get to the Punk match. And I think, you know, in retrospect, obviously Tony Khan's going, man, wish I wouldn't have doused that with cold water on Sunday night, but obviously you couldn't have ever known that. And the other thing I like about the promo was that he talked that way and said that stuff, but, you know, he did it in a Jon Moxley way. Like, this wasn't like, you know, some of the, you know, John Cena, rah-rah WWE kind of speeches that we've seen throughout the years. Like, I thought he did a really nice job of blending the character, blending the situation, and then actually blending in with it the actual booking of what's going to happen here the next 3 weeks. I mean, that he checked all those boxes.
Yeah, because one of the things, too, like you had mentioned it right at the top, they didn't really mention where Punk, Omega, and the Bucks went and why were they stripped. And look, 99.9% of people know, so I don't think it's a big problem. But I'm sure there was someone who's probably sitting there that maybe didn't watch, or maybe they even watched the pay-per-view, but they're not, you know, following it on the internet, or just it's a show that they watch on Wednesday nights, and they're going, well, wait a minute, where do these guys go? It's a very, very small minority, I'm sure. But they didn't even mention their names. And I thought that it was interesting that that Moxley's promo did kind of give you some insight into what happened a little bit, especially to the people that knew what was going on and the people that have followed the story for the last 3 days. But it wasn't done in a way, like you said, where it's kind of this meta behind the scenes type promo. Not at all. Like, the focus was on him winning the championship, what the championship means to him, why he wants it back, what it meant to him before, and what he hopes it'll mean to him, you know, again moving forward. The focus was all on the championship the entire time. Which is what I liked about it the most. Like, he made some references in there, but it never strayed into this thing that felt like it was something other than it was, which was just Jon Moxley proclaiming why he wanted the AEW championship back and why it meant so much to him.
Yeah, well said. All right, we're going to get to callers here in a second, but I want to throw one more thing at you, Mike, before we open up those phone lines. MJF, you know, we got a heavy dose of him to start the show in a kind of a inauthentic rah-rah Buffalo babyface promo to start things off. And then Moxley comes out there, calls him out on it, and then you get, you know, you get a full-on heel MJF again. this is where I kind of, not question, because the Moxley thing went so well, but, you know, part of me was looking at that going, okay, you're kind of like right back where you were with MJF now. And he got a huge pop at All Out in Chicago, opposite CM Punk. Like, did it cross your mind when he was talking out there, Mike, either as kind of a fake babyface or as a heel later in the promo, that, hey, you know, sometimes you just have to go with things. And, you know, we had MJF get cheered in hostile territory in a big way. Like, should he be a babyface right now? Did that cross your mind? Are you okay with how they kind of netted out with him, given the obvious weird circumstances of him not being able to jump into the program with CM Punk?
I actually thought it was smart the way that they did it tonight, because he did get the cheers on Sunday, like you said, which I've almost come to expect. Like, even though he was not getting cheered really, except the exception of that Long Island show, at all before he left, it's a big moment. And like Andrew Socek and I have talked about this before too, where sometimes, especially crowds, like, it gets infectious as it starts to spread through a crowd, but people want to see big moments. Whether it's a heel or a babyface, people want to see big moments. That's, you know, it's cool to say I was in the building when this happened, and people get excited. So, like, I expected, whether it was Chicago, Los Angeles, Boston, New York, wherever it was going to happen, when MJF first returned that first night, I didn't expect the reaction to be any different than it was on Sunday. And it was a little weird that it was in Chicago opposite CM Punk, but it was this big moment of a big name guy coming back after a pretty big storyline that played out in the spring. So I thought what they did tonight was smart, because they had to have expected him to get cheered again tonight, at least at the beginning when he first came out to cut the promo. Cause again, he's back. Like, it's an exciting story. So I thought it was a unique way to pull it off, having him come to the ring in the Bills jersey and play up the crowd, almost to give, again, the viewer that might be a little confused with, well, wait a minute, this guy was the biggest bad guy in the company last time around. Why are people cheering him now? Because you do have to do some explaining to that part of the audience, even if it is a minority. You have to kind of explain to that casual viewer what's going on. And I think it gave a reason for why the crowd would have reacted positively to MJF when he first came out. And of course, then he played into it with, you know, putting the crowd over, and that made people even more excited. And then Moxley comes out and calls him on it, and he just starts ripping into him again and goes back to be full heel. I think they were smart tonight in that they knew he was going to get cheered on the ring entrance on his way to the ring, and they didn't want to just ignore it, and they didn't want MJF to have to just ignore it or pretend that he wasn't getting cheered. So they almost gave a visual reason of why he would be cheered, only to then turn on the crowd later. And I would expect moving forward after what he said later on in the promo that, you know, that ends next week. Like if MJF is on the show next week, he's out and he's a heel from the second he appears on the screen.
That's good stuff. You've sold me. You've convinced me, and that's why it's fun to do these shows just minutes after Dynamite ends. Because yeah, that's a good take. I think that's what they did. I think it was a unique way to go about it. And I also think too, you know, watching MJF play that out, the babyface part. He's so good that he, you know, he walked that fine line where even like when he's out there kind of being babyface, there was still a part of that delivery where you're like, yeah, I'm just not so sure. And then he kind of like brings you along and convinces you along the way. And then you've got like the ultimate, you know, babyface John Moxley coming out there, calling him on the BS. And then, you know, he's right on the money. Like a lot of that is on Moxley, but it's on MJF too for setting up the way that he did. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like about it was I thought it was a little too quick. Like Moxley basically came out and looked at MJF and was like, "You're lying." And MJF just immediately went, "Yeah, I am." And just, and you know, he didn't, that was the only thing I felt like they could have dragged it out maybe like another 30 seconds to a minute longer where MJF just continued to kind of play it up. It was just, that was the only thing that I thought was a little clunky. It was like as soon as Moxley called him on it, he, you know, MJF basically agreed with him and just cut it out at that moment instead of even trying to convince Moxley a little bit.
Yeah. No, fair. All right, well, we'll pause there for a quick second. We're going to get the calls in a minute, but let's set the table for the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, covering the September 7th, 2022 edition of AEW Dynamite. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn filling in for Wade. Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later tonight with the Wade Keller Hotline running down the show and continuing, I'm sure, to provide any kind of news or updates to the story regarding CM Punk, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and the Brawl for All Out, I guess. If you want to go VIP and you can check out Wade's hotline tonight, as well as a lot of coverage throughout the past 3 days about this story in particular, it's pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. A whole bunch of news these last couple days that the Torch has been on top of throughout since Sunday night. So go VIP, check out that coverage, as well as, you know, an ad-free version of the website, back issues of the PW Torch Weekly Newsletter, and so many podcasts, so many great podcasts with some great, great contributors. It's all there. So give us a shot. Now is the time, if there ever was one. It's now. The other voice you hear with me tonight is that of Mike McMahon from PWTorch.com and the PW Torch DailyCast. Mike, an absolute pleasure, man, to talk to you. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, I think this is the first time you and I have done one of these, and I'm glad. I actually was supposed to be here last week and had a scheduling conflict on my end, and I was joking with Andrew last night. I was like, hey, you know what? My scheduling conflict ended up working out for me, because of all weeks to be on, this is probably the week to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I got to work with Andrew about maybe a month and a half ago, and now I get to work with you too. Been listening to both you guys for quite some time. So yeah, this is great, man. Let's go ahead and just open up the phones, Mike. There's obviously, guys, a lot to get to. I'm sure many of you want to talk about the Punk situation or the Buck situation. That situation, feel free, but also feel free to bring up other happenings from Dynamite this week as well. We will cover it all. We've got quite a few callers in the queue that want to get on tonight. So if you can, try to keep your points to one or two, and then that way we can try to get to as many of you guys that are waiting as possible. We will do our best. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you want to hop on with us. If you don't want to talk but you want to contribute, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. I'll be checking that as we go through the show here tonight. let's go ahead and start off with some calls, Mike. We'll start first with Scott in Tampa. Scott in Tampa, thanks for calling. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. This may be kind of jumping the gun, but I thought this was one of the best Dynamites ever, to be honest with you. And here's why. The way that they addressed the show from – or addressed the controversy and kind of laid out the show from start to finish, that right at the minute, at the beginning of the show, I really loved. The opening – just an opening theme. I was really anticipating Dynamite because I saw the tweet earlier tonight with by Tony Khan saying that he would address the World and Trios Championship. I was kind of anticipating like how he was going to do it. How would the crowd react to him if he came out live? It's going to be a free tape. When are they going to announce it? Are they going to announce it right at the top of the show? And just from the opening theme, it kind of told me everything. They didn't show CM Punk. They didn't show the Young Bucks. They didn't show Kenny Omega. They showed MJF, the guy who hadn't been on TV in 3 months. And the last time we saw him, he was cursing out everyone. They showed him in the opening few seconds of that opening montage. And then the show opened, and I felt like it was laid out it was a well-paced show from the start. They threw to a video package, which they don't barely ever do. And when I call and complain about Dynamite, one of my main complaints is that they never show what happened on the last show or the last pay-per-view, and they just go from thing to thing to thing. But they showed the video, then it went to the pre-taped recording of Tony Khan, and I felt like he did what he had to do. It was the right decision, whether Punk was hurt or not hurt. At the end of the day, that fight happened. I thought all of them should have got stripped and suspended, and if some of them have to leave, and so be it. And I know I'm kind of rambling on. You guys have a lot of callers, but like I just really love this show and like, how it was laid out with the championship, the tournament for the next 2 weeks. They had the women's match in what third segment of the show. All the matches made sense. That Danielson and the Hangman match was great. The short acclaimed and swerve promo interaction. Everything was great. Like how they laid it out. I hope this is the type of AEW we can get going forward. And of course the Moxley promo, that was great. You guys already touched on all bases. But like just the pacing of the show. You guys want to talk about that and how did you guys feel about that? And if we can should look forward to AEW being bad more often.
Yeah, I thought the pace of the show was good too. And I thought, you know, as I said, I think it was, you know, if you're Tony Khan and you either strongly believe or know for certain that you're not going to be able to get any business out of this whole thing with Punk and the Young Bucks and Omega, you know, I think the best, you know, course of action was to just do what he did, you know, get the pre-tape out of the way, you know, pre-record it so you don't have to have Tony Khan talking in front of a live audience. He can just deliver the message, get in, get out, and then on with the show. So I do agree. The setup, as I said, I think that along with Jon Moxley making that championship the focus of the promo that he cut was central to kind of like just setting the pace of the show. So, yeah, I agree, Scott. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not usually a fan of brushing things under the rug that everybody knows about, but I don't think that's what they were doing. Like, I think it was a situation where, like you said, if he knows this is beyond the point where they can ever do any sort of business with this whole situation, and it certainly seems like it's at that point, right? Why continue to bring it up? You know, why continue to kind of hammer us over the head with it if you're never going to get the Punk Bucks match or the Punk Omega match? If it's past the point of repair and that's never going to happen, it makes sense for them to do whatever they had to do, which obviously if those guys aren't going to be on the show, you strip them of their titles and you move on and you don't really dwell on it. You don't have guys. I thought both Tony doing the short and succinct announcement in a pre-tape, not out in front of the crowd where he may have had to react to what their reaction was smart. Little things all night long, from Tony doing it in a pre-tape to, the Acclaimed getting their rap cut off. Like, you know, like you said, tonight wasn't the night for the Acclaim to rap about this situation. Really, there might not be a night where it is appropriate, especially in the middle of an investigation, you know, potentially an internal investigation. Mm-hmm. So they did a lot of things that I think they in the past wouldn't have done. Like they don't usually ignore situations like this, but they've never had a situation like this before where no matter how many times they reference it, there's probably never going to be a single ounce of business they can do with it. So why bring it up? Like, why have the Acclaim make a reference to it in a rap if it's never going to happen? And I would say you can't do that until cooler heads prevail at the very least. And there's no cooler heads at all right now, I'm sure. I'm sure every party is still pretty heated about what happened the other night. So tonight would not be the night to really reference any of it. And I think they took the wise route, which was kind of just ignore it, put the focus back titles. We're going to crown new trios champions. We're going to run a tournament to crown a new world champion, which I know on social media, I think on Twitter, you know, people were kind of like, oh, geez, another tournament. But what is he going to do? Like, what is Tony's options here? You know, I think a tournament makes sense. So I thought they did the best job they could in terms of getting through the awkward beginning of the show where they have to announce what's going on and then just move forward. Put the focus on the championships and move forward, and whatever happens, happens. Whoever returns will return eventually, and whoever doesn't return won't return.
You know, there's some interesting psychology there. You know, if you were kind of like a casual – or maybe you're like a just diehard WWE fan who follows AEW on the periphery and knows what's going on but doesn't watch usually, or – you know, you kind of just heard about this and, okay, I'm going to tune in to see what happens. Like, you know, if you were tuning in to see, you know, madness, pandemonium, like everybody shooting on one another, like if that's what was your expectation, Mike, I mean, they just did not deliver anywhere near that. And I think it was the smart call, but, you know, if you're going to attempt to use this to attract viewership, like, do you get what I'm saying? Like if people are coming to your show tonight expecting, oh man, I can't wait to see the sparks fly, and you don't give them any sparks, you know, do you think Tony Khan is sitting there going, man, we started off the show at 1.2 million and then we dropped to like 800,000. Would that matter to you, Mike, if you're Tony, or is it just, you know what, like, the numbers are what they are. We have to do this, and we have to do this way. So be it. We'll build back up.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter of he has to do it. He has to do it the right way, and that's, you know, that's that. I think that's what he has to do. He really doesn't have a choice. I'm sure the numbers probably are going to spike at the very beginning because, like you said, there's a lot of people are interested in what was going to happen here, and I'm sure a lot of people checked out the beginning of the show to see, you know, what was going to happen. And at the same time, like, if you were looking for little sparks, there were still some that you could kind of pick at over the course of the show and go like, was that a shot? Like,
yeah,
what,
you're
like,
right.
Like,
you're right.
For example, one of the ones that stuck out to me, and there, I'm sure there were more. This is just one of the ones that I happened to catch. When Regal was on commentary during the Danielson-Page match, he made a comment along the lines of, you know, Hangman's one of the few guys in the locker room I've really had no interaction with, so I don't know much about him. And I found it – that one stuck out because, again, Punk's criticism of Hangman was what? He doesn't want to learn from anybody. You know, he says he doesn't need to learn from anybody. He says he doesn't need to go to any of these people that have knowledge in our locker room. He can do it on his own. Was that just Regal making a point? Like, hey, I've never been in a company with Hangman before, so I don't know much about him. Was it just him, like, doing his job on commentary, or was it him taking a jab at Hangman? I don't know. But if you were looking for fireworks, you can kind of see these little Easter eggs, for lack of a better term, that were planted and wonder, like, was that somebody taking a shot or was it not? Like, you can kind of create those narratives within your own mind, because I think if there were any type of fireworks, and I think they were subtle. They were individuals doing maybe things on their own, but doing it in a subtle way, not necessarily out there, you know, cutting promos about what just happened the other night.
Yeah, well said. Good catch. I did not catch that. So good. It's hard to think that that's not a shot, but, you know, hey, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist.
I would have to think so too. Yeah, I mean, I would have to think that it was not either, but I was like, wow, that was an interesting choice of words considering what the criticism of Hangman was the other night.
Yeah, he's either grinning from ear to ear backstage right now or going, oh, man, why did I pick those words? Why?
Yeah.
Scott, back to you. Any other final points or other comments on the show tonight?
Yeah. I would just kind of say rebuttal to some of the folks who, you know, the quote-unquote casual fans who may just have tuned in and said, why they vacate the championship? Why? Where's CM Punk? Where are the Trios championships? Like, number one, if those people do exist and they're watching that, if they really care about CM Punk and or the championship and what happened, but they're not a regular viewer and they don't stay on the internet, guess what they're going to do? They're going to pick up their phone like everyone else does in 2022, and they're going to type in what happened. And as soon as you put in CM Punk or Trio Championship or vacate AEW or Championship, you're going to get a ton of stories about what happened the past few days. It's been talked about ad nauseum. So, again, the right decision is kind of just turn a page. And if those – and about your point, Zach, if 1.2 million folks watched, tuned in at the beginning and kind of lost off, I think Tony has to shrug his shoulders and say, oh, well, this is what I had to do for the fans who are going to be here next week. In the weeks going forward, and the fans who have stuck with us, and those who are frustrated, those who may have left and kind of want to come back, they may enjoy this show. Like, I'm one of those folks. I didn't order the pay-per-view this past Sunday, but I knew everything that happened, and now I'm looking forward to AEW in the future. But my next point or question I want to ask you guys, the format of the show was kind of different, like I said, with the pacing. But also something that stuck out was the fact of the folks who are wrestling for the championship. They didn't. Sometimes they would, they would say, "Yeah, Ryan Danielson and Hangman Page are getting the spots because they're in the top 5 or 10 in the rankings." They didn't mention that. They just mentioned Ryan Danielson's a 6-time world champion and 3-time world champion Jon Moxley and the accolades for Guevara and Allen and Jericho. And then the Acclaimed getting a rematch. You know, there's no real explanation as to why they're getting a rematch. Normally, they would try to find some stupid, silly reason to fit their ranking system to justify why someone should get the world title shot. But I like the way they did it, at least with the world title, saying that this is why these folks are in this tournament, not talking about the rings at all. So do you think that's something that could look forward to in the future with AEW, kind of getting away from that ranking system and finding, like, these other storyline reasons, but they make sense as to why certain individuals may be getting title shots versus others?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I hope that they're kind of – if this is a, okay, see you later rankings type thing, I think that's a good move. But, you know, to be fair, though, too, they only really use the rankings when they want to now anyway. So I don't know either way if it really matters. Ultimately though, you know, the ratings, they're not effective. They're not effective. And if you're running a weekly television show, as good of a concept as it is to have rankings and stick to that, it's hard. It's really difficult to do that. Because you've got injuries, you've got, like, just you want to draw ratings, you want to format your shows. I mean, there's so many things that go into it. So, yes, if I'm Tony Khan, I'm peeling away from those ratings. And I thought, Mike, tonight, the way that they, you know, this isn't a, a number one contenders tournament to the world title that has, you know, Kip Sabian in it and one of the Gun Club guys and, you know, XYZ other mid-carder, right? Like, you know, these are some top guys in the company, you know, that have been there, that have done some things. Jericho, Danielson, Moxley, Page, and then even Sammy Guevara, like, you know, multiple TNT champion, Darby Allin, former TNT champion. Like, I like getting to your challengers that way better in a situation like this than just going, all right, well, I guess this random person on AEW Dark is 65-0 in his last 65 matches, so we got to put him in the tournament. Like, this worked. I thought they gave him credibility. I thought they, you know, actually showed it and talked about it. They didn't make you wonder. You know, they just said Jon Moxley is a 3-time champion. Chris Jericho, first champion ever. Like, they showed you that. And that's how they tried to, you know, paint the tournament as something meaningful and and credible, and you know they didn't need the rankings for that. You just have to tell smart stories, and if you do that, I think you can ultimately get to where you want to go. Mike?
100%. Yeah, that's been a criticism I've had for a long time, where they play with the rankings to come up with an excuse for whatever it is that they're booking, when in reality you could just ignore that piece of it and be fine. Like, if
right.
MJF had that first – like I think back to when MJF had his first title shot like a year and a half ago now, whenever that was. I think it was during the pandemic, actually.
Yeah, it was against Moxley, I think.
I think so, yeah. It was a while ago. But going into that match, I remember Andrew Sochak and I joked about it. We were like, you know, who did he beat going into that match? He had beaten like five guys on Dark, and he was the number one contender. Well, why? Why? Because he beat five guys I've never heard of on Dark before? Like, it didn't make any sense. But they put on that match because MJF was hot and they wanted MJF to have a title shot. So, and that's what they wanted to do. So like, you don't need to make him the number one contender just in order to do that. If that's what you're doing, if you're playing with these rankings without putting a guy like necessarily on a path to earning that title shot, then just get rid of him. Just don't even have him. I mean, it's fine. I think it's a concept that can work if you are disciplined enough to stay within that and go, okay, I've got this guy that's ranked 10th right now. It's September 7th. He's going to be the guy. But it requires a lot of planning ahead. It would require Tony right now here in September to go, okay, in February at the pay-per-view, this guy's my world title challenger. So I'm going to start to put him on a road of climbing the rankings here over the next 5 months. But like you said, there's weekly television, there's injuries. Who's going to walk out? Who's going to do this? Who's going to get suspended? Who's going to get hurt? It's way too hard to do that. So at this point, considering how they've utilized them over the last 3 years, I agree. I just think it's time to just scrap them. Do what you want. You can still keep the records if that's what you want to do. And if you want to reference, you know, as a guy's going into a match, hey, he's challenging for the title right now. He's undefeated in his last 18 matches or whatever to make it sound like he's on some sort of roll. Great, fine, but you don't need to have that ranking number next to them because they really haven't done much with it anyway.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, it's like I just don't think that even if Tony Khan was like, hey, I'm committing to this, I'm committing to these damn rankings, and the rankings, that says everything. You know, I don't think that a guy or a woman climbing the rankings is, like, the best story to tell on your television shows. You know what I mean? Like, tell something deeper, you know. Yes, you can still talk about the meaning of the title, and obviously you should do that. But, you know, I think it has to be more than just, oh, well, okay, he was 10 last week, and now he's 8. You know, he's moving up. Like, because it's kind of like, okay, end of story right there. Here, you know, with the way they rolled out this tournament, you've got guys who, you know, all have a claim to that top spot. Hopefully, you know, if Tony Khan is smart and really wants to position this Grand Slam tournament thing as the biggest deal possible, you know, hopefully we hear from these guys. We heard from Moxley today. You know, we heard from Jericho today. Well, maybe we can get Danielson at some point. So, you know, you can tell good stories that way without, you know, the rankings. And I don't know, Scott, if this is like a full-on pivot from that strategy, but either way, you know, I don't think it's, you know, they don't play any real role of importance at this point anyway. Hey, Scott, thanks. Really appreciate the call, man.
No, not a problem. Thanks for taking my call. You guys have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for calling. All right, we'll keep our callers going here. We will go to, let me see here. Go to 313. 313, you are up. Thanks for holding. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, this is Grant from Detroit.
Did you say Grant?
Yep, Grant from Detroit.
Grant, thanks for calling. What did you think of Dynamite?
I think it was actually a pretty decent show for what it was. The only thing that I noticed, like, okay, yeah, CM Punk in the Bucks and Omega were in there, but it just felt like it was a show that was kind of devoid of star power. Like, yeah, you got Danielson and Moxley, but Jericho wasn't on the show. But then in a situation like this, it just felt like that next group of guys, like, that you probably would want to be ready for your next title contenders. Like, it just didn't feel like they were there. Like, okay, Black was gone. Miro wasn't on the show. It just felt like it was lacking star power. Like, no Britt Baker. It was a little odd in that aspect, considering you already missing these stars. You would think you want to get those next round of stars on there. Like, no Ricky Stark, no Powerhouse Hobbs, no follow-up on that storyline. Like, did that seem odd to you all?
Yeah. Well, Mike, what do you think?
My connection was going in and out there for a minute, so I was kind of – I didn't hear a lot of what the caller was saying, unfortunately.
No problem. I'll take it first. Or maybe we should just have a brawl backstage or something about this.
Yeah, that's what we should do. Yeah.
you know, I think, Grant, there was elements of that as far as star power goes. And I did have that thought cross my mind of like, okay, wow, all right. So because when you think about it, you're losing four really top stars of your company here with the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and CM Punk. And, you know, but recognizing that, I also, like, it was kind of a passing thought, though, Grant, because I looked at it like, all right, well, Omega's been gone for however long and, you know, hasn't been around. The Young Bucks, for as big a stars as I think they are, I think they could be way bigger stars if they were featured better and booked properly. But sometimes they're just not even on the show for, you know, a couple weeks at a time. And I know they're never like fully ingrained in like any major, major storylines either. They're kind of like just hovering around, kind of doing their own thing. And then CM Punk, he's been gone for most of the summer. And so, you know, when you have a solid core of Moxley, Danielson, Paige, and even like the women's division, Toni Storm and Britt Baker, she had a pre-tape today, that backstage thing from All Out. So she was around. Like, I mean, I think there's enough there to build off of. And you had MJF too. And you didn't have like your Darby Allins of the world. You didn't have Sammy Guevara in the ring. You didn't have FTR on the show, but you had Wardlow. And so I think, Mike, that there is enough star power here to move forward for Tony Khan, as long as he, you know, plays his cards right with these guys. You know, what about you?
Yeah, I agree, and I think what's gonna end up happening is he's going to have to lean a lot more on Jericho, Danielson, and Moxley are the three that I would think he's going to have to lean on more heavily. I think if you were to list, you know, going into the weekend, if you were to list like the top five biggest names in the company as far as star power goes, Punk and Omega are in that top five with Danielson, Moxley, and Jericho. MJF wasn't back yet, but now he is, and you know, I think he could be in that conversation now too. So it's like you lost two guys, but you also added one, so you're really only down one. Like, I think you can make it work, and I think he's going to probably rely more heavily on those guys, whether it's in the ring tonight with Danielson in a match, or an appearance with Moxley cutting a promo, an appearance with Jericho where he's cutting a backstage promo. Like, I think he's going to have to rely more heavily on those guys, and I think he knows that. I think that's why Moxley and Jericho, who weren't scheduled to be on the show this week, were called into duty. They weren't called into duty to wrestle, but they were called into duty to appear so that the show still had some star power to it.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, is, like, you know, there's guys that, you know, I think in a pre, you know, Punk Danielson, we haven't even talked about Adam Cole, you know, he can be a player too, you know, pre those guys coming on board, you had guys in the company that were more fast-tracked, I'd say, is a lack of a great term to use, to that main event picture. I mean, you have Darby Allin, you know, you've got Wardlow now, you know, where somebody like Wardlow, with Punk around and Omega around and the Young Bucks around, like, you know, would Wardlow get a real chance to be a headline act in AEW with CM Punk around? I don't know. Maybe he would, but he certainly wasn't on that trajectory. Well, now, you know, there's top spots open, you know, and so Darby can get back into the picture. Wardlow can get back into the picture. Ricky Starks, Jungle Boy. Like, there's people there that can step up and that will have to step up. And you know, before this weekend, reporting out of the AEW locker room was that some of those guys, you know, had been a little disgruntled, a little unhappy that, hey, they're, you know, they want a bigger opportunity. Well, you know, now they're going to get it, you know, and Tony Khan will have no choice, Mike, but to put some of those guys and women into those top spots.
Yeah, he is going to have to. And it's going to be a balancing act, though, too, because I think, you know, he's going to have to rely on the bigger names, especially with the television deal coming up. Like,
yeah,
the fact
yeah.
that they – I think in some ways – signing Danielson, signing Punk, you know, Moxley came in pretty early, and Jericho was right at the beginning, so you really can't count those guys. But Danielson and Punk in particular did kind of fast-track them a little bit. Like, it put them in a different position than they were before those guys came in, both in terms of just the show and who was being featured on the show, but also in terms of star power as a company. And, you know, those guys with the ratings they've drawn and being marketable names from WWE in the past, that's going to be impressive to Warner executives. And I think they're going to have to lean on those guys here now as they kind of navigate these next few months and navigate what is going to end up being, you know, a renegotiation on their television deal. And that's going to be important. Spots open, but like, not to diminish anybody else that's on the way up, but if the top stars in the company right now were just the guys that were kind of being pushed there 2 years ago, Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy, Wardlow, those type, if all those guys were at the top right now and they never signed Punk and they never signed Danielson, the company's in a much different place. And maybe you would have younger, newer talent at the top, but I think it would be harder for Tony to negotiate some of these deals that he's been able to negotiate because of the fact that he has some star power on board. So it's a balancing act. At the same time, you don't want to be like WCW either, where it's just all pre-established stars and you're not building any new ones. You got to be building new ones at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and like you said too, you know, he really, in this instance, he didn't really have a choice anyway. So, you know, you kind of have to call that out in the open as well, which you did. Grant, back to you with any follow-up comments on what we said or perhaps another topic altogether.
Like what y'all said, I guess it does make a little bit of sense. But my next topic is, you know, normally when I call in, my thing is with the actual tag division. So, okay, we get the Acclaim and Swerve in Our Glory. I don't know if they kind of going for a heel dynamic with just Swerve or the entire team. But then right after that, say they put the belts on the Acclaim after Grand Slam, then we back to the same place that Swerve and Our Glory was. Where do you go next? Are you going to go babyface with FTR, or you look around, it's not a lot of viable tag teams left? So what y'all think?
Mike, yeah, the FTR thing continues to boggle my mind from a booking perspective, especially on a night like tonight, right, where you really want to, like, you know, okay, these are my guys now, those were my guys, these are my guys now, and FTR, you know, I know they're a tag team, but, you know, AEW has presented itself as a tag team company. They've got some of the best tag teams in the world, even after the suspensions, and FTR still is on the outside looking in on the AEW tag team titles. I think that's a problem. I think when you talk like different acts that Tony Khan's going to lean into, like, you've got one there ready and waiting. So I guess my gut reaction is instantly, hey, you know, yeah, get FTR in that picture. However, I don't know if that's the best thing for the Acclaimed, you know, who are over right now. And it remains to be seen, Mike, what kind of over they are. Like, is this Rusev Day over, you know, where it's really, really scorching hot, white hot, and then kind of filters out or cools off quickly? Or is it something a little bit more real? We don't know. I give Tony Khan a thumbs up on, you know, running with it while he has it. I think it's smart to run this match back. But you can't really put the Acclaimed against FTR against one another. That doesn't mean he won't, but I think there's a, you know, there it can do damage to either team if you do that. So talk about that a little bit. And then as far as Swerve and Our Glory goes, and I think they've been a serviceable tag team, Grant, for kind of what's been happening in AEW like these last few months. But I still see them as singles guys put together into a tag team. And so the real easy way out of that is just to have them feud with one another. Swerve's been doing great. You know, he's always been a good heel. I think he's shown that on Sunday and tonight. And Keith Lee could play a great babyface off of him and also a heel if you want to go that direction. So I think you split those guys up, have them collide head on, and then just move on with the tag team scene. So, Mike, a lot there, but take it away.
I have to think that that's what they were doing tonight, like planting the seeds of Swerve being a heel and splitting up their team, because otherwise I don't know what they were doing having him interrupt the Acclaim. Even though the Acclaim right now are supposed to be the heels, they're so over. They're getting such a positive reaction, and people want to hear the Max Caster rap, that when it gets interrupted and doesn't happen, they had to be smart enough. I mean, we're not talking – Tony's not a dumb guy. Like, he had to be smart enough to know that that was going to get a heel reaction on Swerve, and it's exactly what happened. But at the same time, you know, I thought it was smart if the intent was to make Swerve the heel, because that's what it did. And it also gave them an excuse to not have the Acclaimed rap about all the behind-the-scenes issues
yes.
that are going on right now. Because, like, what do? You have the Acclaimed come out and do a rap without mentioning any of it? Well, that's a little weird, because that's not what they've done in the past. You know what I mean? Like, they've gotten in
yeah.
trouble for some of their raps in the past. So, you know, having them come out and completely ignore it would be kind of out of character for them. The only way you could do it would be to have them not mention it at all. And by having Swerve interrupt them, they were able to accomplish that.
And it's not what the audience like would have wanted to hear either. Like, I think, you know, I think Max Caster the last couple of days was even teasing, you know, his mic work. I think he posted on Instagram a
yeah.
picture of a microphone today. Like, you
yeah.
know, so yeah, no, good stuff. Where are you on FTR? Like, am I overplaying my hand on the impact that they could make with a little bit better and focused booking around them?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the booking on them right now is very weird and has been for a while. You know, you've got them wrestling singles matches on Rampage, and I still don't know why. You know, you had them wrestling on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, which was fine. I mean, they wanted to get some sort of star power onto that show, and obviously they wanted to do that match with the Briscoes, and they can't have them on TNT or TBS, so they were kind of forced into that. But it has been weird. I mean, I think the whole idea of having tag team champions that are, like you said, and I agree, two singles guys that they just kind of slap together is strange when you have such a deep tag team division
right.
and multiple tag teams that they haven't done anything with. I mean, you've got the Acclaimed on the way up, you've got FTR, you had the Bucks, you had Penta and Phoenix, you've got Santana and Ortiz, who they've really done nothing
yep.
with. Like, you know, there's so many teams to put the tag titles on two singles guys, I thought was a little strange right from the get-go. And it kind of plays into exactly the same issues I'd have with FTR. Like, why isn't FTR in that spot? That's where they should be. You know, it's a tag team division. It's always felt weird. So if they do some sort of reset here, because I don't see how you can come out of Grand Slam with the Acclaim losing that match. I mean, if that's what you're going to do, if the Acclaim lose at Arthur Ashe Stadium, then just, you know, pack them up. They're done. I mean,
yeah.
you're
yeah.
losing two matches in a row like that. You can't do that. So my guess is that they win the titles at Grand Slam, probably leads to a Keith Lee Swerve Strickland breakup, and they feud. And then the real question becomes, where does the Acclaim go from there? Because you've got these trios titles now, which are occupying Pentagon and Phoenix. You know, they're tied up with that now, apparently, after tonight. So who's the ones to feud with the Acclaim? Is it FTR? And is that a great fit? I don't know. I mean, that may feel like a babyface feud.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I don't like about it. It's not that they can't have a good feud and can't have good matches. It's just, you know, you've got FTR, who's supremely popular, and then Acclaim, who's on the rise. Like, why dilute either of their kind of reactions and people's perceptions toward them? So I'm with you on that. Grant, back to you. Any final comments or questions for tonight?
I think we are kind of overestimating the depth of the tag division just because different people are getting pulled so many different ways. So, like, you got to think, like, Santana Ortiz, Santana is out, and he's injured, and then you got, like, from there, who else really is there around? The Bucks gone, like, I don't, like, where it used to be their strength, it might be one of their weakest divisions now, but that's all I have.
Grant, thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Call again. All right, if you want to get in on the phone lines here, now is the time to do it. Jump in, raise your hand, press 1. If you call, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. Up next, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, always a pleasure to talk to you, man. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
It was a fine show. My first question is on the MJF promo tonight. Can you recall the wrestler ever praising two personalities from the rival organization, how he mentioned, he said, I think Triple H was one of his favorite wrestlers, and Cody looked very high upon to get, like, that heel reaction, because I'm not sure, like, in WCW if they did that, like, if someone mentioned Steve Austin or The Rock on their premise, but I could be forgetting, so maybe you can jog my memory on that.
I don't remember that? I mean, I know that they tossed around in the early days of Monday Night War and Nitro, you know, WCW would talk about Hogan and things like that. But outside of that, nothing really comes to mind. Mike, is there something that kind of jumps out to you as like, oh no, what about this moment?
No, not in the way that MJF did it tonight, where he was, you know, praising people on the other side. You know, he was doing it as a heel within the context of the show, but I can't remember anything like that where a wrestler on one show in one company was kind of putting over the wrestlers and in some case the leadership of the
right.
opposing side.
Yes, it is kind of MJF stick. Ryan, I'm going to pause you right there because we got an email on this. So good topic, but I'll throw back to you in a second for your next two questions. Mike, we got an email from somebody that did not leave their name, but it's on this subject exactly. It says, MJF, you're really mentioning Nick Khan, Triple H, and taking a championship to WWE? With everything that's happened lately, focus on your own brand. Don't bring up the other brand, especially when there might be several people who actually feel that way now with Triple H in charge. Really good promo by Moxley. No Max Caster rap. That's lame, especially when hyped enough hours before. So we talked the Moxley promo and we talked the Caster rap a bit. But MJF, like, he's done this like before, you know, to varying degrees as far as talking up, you know, people in WWE or the potential bidding war, as he said, of 2024. I think you can do this, but you don't want to cross the line. And I think that's kind of where I'm at with it. And I don't think tonight crossed the line. I mean, this is the MJF character at this point right now, you know, and I think he's going to be leaning into that 2024 thing for a long, long time until, you know, either he signs a new contract or he becomes free agent. I think, you know, for him, it's one of those situations where you can't trust that type of verbiage in the hands of everybody. But I think with MJF, you can. He finesses it well. And I think it applies to his character more than just some random, some random WWE mention. So I'm okay with this. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it. I mean, I agree with you. I think it kind of fits his whole character, and it fits what he's been doing now for 8-9 months. I mean, that's what he's been talking
right.
about forever. The only thing, you know, we were talking, Ryan brought up, has it ever happened before? And I was, as we're going through this, I was trying to think. The only thing that I can think of that even comes close, but it was never done on air or in character, was I think in the mid-90s when Bret Hart was first negotiating with WCW, right before he signed that like 20-year deal to stay at the time. This was probably like 97 at some point, like early part of 97. He had done an interview, I think, in the WWF magazine, where he talked about Eric Bischoff and in a flattering way, like was putting over Eric Bischoff in the magazine about, you know, how he negotiated with WCW and everything. But it's kind of different, because it wasn't like he was being interviewed in the ring at a Raw about it. It was in the magazine. But that's really the only thing I can even think of where somebody on an opposite side like that has been so gracious, or not gracious is the wrong word, but so overtly putting over, you know, somebody on the other side of what is a wrestling war. So, but as far as MJ's character doing that, you know, it fits what he's been doing for the last several months. It's not the first time he's done it, and I agree with you. I think he's going to be leaning into it for a while. I don't think it's the last time he's going to make references to it either.
Yeah, no. And less is more with it, too. Like, if you have him doing it and you've got, like, four other people talking about it on the show, okay, then I think you have to relook at what you're doing here. And same with, like, you know, the meta storyline. It's like, okay, once in a while, if you want to drop some of that stuff in there and have a story that way, okay. But it can't be the single focus of your show. And the same thing with MJF. It can be a piece of his character and a piece of what he talks about, but it can't be the only thing. He still has to be a storyteller in the company, like, and with what he's actually doing now, and not, you know, just talking about the future. So it's a balanced thing, I think, Mike. And so far, you know, there's been stuff where I'm just like, oh man, like that's just egregious in certain directions. And I just haven't felt that way about him and this part of his shtick quite yet, but maybe talk to me in December 2023. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Ryan, sorry for hijacking the question there, but you brought up a good topic and I wanted to give it a little time, but back to you, Ryan, for your second question of the night.
That question on Stokely Hathaway, pretty impressed with the way he, like, drove that microphone into the guy's lung. Like, it really looked like it did some damage. Yeah, I know he's wrestled in the past in Ring of Honor and some indie shows, so could we possibly see him in the ring sometime in the near future? And also, were you impressed ever with his in-ring work, or were you sort of, like, down on it when you saw him wrestle?
So, man, I was never down on him wrestling. I know he spent time in the ring in a handful of places, and so it was never where I was like, oh man, like, that guy's got to get out of that ring right away. He's got no business being there. It wasn't that. It was just that he's infinitely more effective in the manager role, and so it's like, all right, well, you know, would you rather have him kind of be a mid-card at best pro wrestler, or, you know, a main event level manager? And I always erred on the side of, hey, be a top level manager. And I think, you know, he's carved out a really nice spot for himself in this business, even more so now with the angle that played out on Sunday at All Out, with the kind of reveal of this faction with MJF involved. Believe it or not, I'm going to use this as another launching point, Ryan. So, Mike, Stokely Hathaway, he was majorly involved in the casino ladder match, climbing up the ladder, grabbing the chip, and then handing it to who we now know as MJF. Tonight, you know, he came out, I think, as if he was going to cut a promo and explain everything, but then kind of got cut off, and then had the angle with the, you know, with the AEW stagehand. I asked you this question knowing that, okay, there may have had to be a big pivot made here, because MJF is not going to be able to feud with CM Punk right now. And clearly, you know, they were teasing something at the end of All Out. So, you know, they could have easily had to change plans. But with that stipulated too, did you need to hear more from Stokely Hathaway based on what we saw Sunday night and just how much, you know, that angle impacted that show?
Yeah, I think I would have liked to have known what the connection was between that group and MJF, because neither party addressed that. Like,
right.
MJF didn't address it in his promo, and then obviously Stokely's promo kind of got cut off right away. Like, if they did that small little angle, and then they were out of there pretty quickly. but they never addressed it at all. Like, not even MJF talked about it. So what was the connection? Why were they helping him? Were they hired? That was something somebody had said to me earlier tonight. Well, the explanation could be as simple as MJF paid them for the night. He hired them for the night. Well, okay, that's a plausible explanation, but if that's the case, then have somebody tell me that.
Say that.
I don't know that. You know, you just have somebody say it. So I think that's kind of the one little loose end that they still have to tie up with the whole thing. It's just explaining what that association was all about, because they didn't do it tonight. Neither party did.
Yeah, and I want, I wonder if that tells me that maybe, maybe the angle's off. Like, I don't know. It just seems like such an odd thing not to address, because of how significant it was on Sunday. And it'd be a shame if that were the situation, because I think that I like that angle. Like, I think it had potential. It was different. And it gave, Stokely Hathaway, if he's not connected with MJF and they abandoned that, that group is just a little less, I don't want to say less fun, but less credible, because it doesn't have that main event kind of pin holding it all together, which I think MJF can be. So I'm with you. I think you kind of needed to address this. I'll give it a week, just with the caveat of, hey, okay, you were going through some stuff. You got to kind of recalibrate everything. But it'd be a bummer, I think. I think Stokely Hathaway is talented enough to tangle with the guys at the top of the card on a regular basis. MJF was his ticket to do that. I don't know that anybody in the faction now without him is a ticket to that. It's kind of more the same with him at that point.
Exactly, yeah. And I don't – it's one of those things, too, where, like you said, so much of this show – did not exist Sunday night. Like, Tony didn't know that he was going to have to do a new Trios championship match in this show. He didn't know he was going to have to do a Moxley promo. He didn't know that he was going to have to do a world title tournament match. Like, none of this, half of this show, if not more, was not planned as of Sunday. So what was the original plan? We'll never know. Only Tony knows that. But, I do think... It could have just been something as simple as, hey, this angle isn't going to work now, so you're not going to be together even though you were supposed to be, and they got to figure something else out. But I at least like the fact that they got them on the show. It wasn't like that group was ignored altogether. The segment was a little strange, where I was going to cut a promo, and the stage manager told me I had no time, so we beat them up, and that was still then the end of the segment, and I didn't say anything. But at least they had them on the show, which tells me that they're going to be an important part of whatever is moving forward, even if it's in something different than what was originally imagined.
Yeah. Where are you at on Stokely Hathaway? Like, what's his ceiling? Does he have one?
I think he can absolutely be a manager for a main event guy. The only thing I was concerned with coming out of Sunday was MJF doesn't need Stokely Hathaway, obviously. MJF can cut his own promo. So if he's going, I think he can absolutely be a manager to a guy at that main event level who doesn't really have the promo skill. I don't really know who that is yet. We kind of have to kind of figure out who that guy is. But in a different way, could he be, the Paul Heyman for somebody's Brock Lesnar? I think he could be, because he's very talented in that role. It's just a matter of finding the right fit, and I don't know right now who that guy is, and I'm not even sure that Tony does yet.
I know. I think that's fair. All right, Ryan, hijacked your questions for a second time, but tossing it back to you, my friend, for your third question of the night. Go ahead.
My last question is on the suspension of Young Bucks Kenny Omega. I've heard journalists say that there's no way this could be worse. How can a journalist be sure that there's not even like a 1% chance, that, it's not a work? I know that, title being vacated, that gives a better hint that it most likely isn't a work, but they were saying this long before the season happened.
Yeah, I mean, if the question is, like, is there a 1% chance that it could be a work? Like, I guess you kind of have to answer yes to that, Mike, because, I mean, there's always a chance, and especially in wrestling, there's a chance. At the same time, though, there are a lot of different news sources out there that are reputable, doing some very good reporting on this, and so and it's so high profile that I don't know that it's a situation where, you know, we're even going to be talking about, oh, you made this up, oh, you made that up. Like, there's some really good reporting going around with us here at the Torch and across the wrestling media, that I just think that if someone would have kind of sniffed that out at this point in time, but 1%, yeah, I mean I certainly wouldn't argue with, hey, is there a 1% chance that this is a work? Sure, but I very much doubt that, Mike.
Yeah, I agree. I think especially where legal has now gotten involved,
right.
Multiple reports, that's when I think it's a pretty clear indication that it's not. So you never really want to say never, but, you know, 0.1% chance that this all ends up being a work. Yeah, I guess maybe, but I'm like everybody else, 99, you know, as certain as certain can be that it's not.
Yeah. Yep. Agree. Ryan, any follow-up on any of the stuff that we kind of just discussed, or maybe a fourth question this week, because it's a weird week in the wrestling business. But back to you for whatever you got.
Well, I'll just go a prediction. I think Daniel Bryan's beat Moxley at Grand Slam, because I think it's too obvious that Moxley wins the title. I think there's going to be a chase for him to get that title back.
All right. Interesting. Ryan, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and great topics, great questions as usual. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking that call.
Of course. Yeah, Mike, you know, okay, we talked around the tournament issue, and but we haven't kind of really dug into it. Are you confident one way or the other as to where this thing's going, knowing kind of where it may end up as far as a match with MJF? Because I think that's ultimately the end game. To me, you know, Moxley chasing, I think, is there's absolutely a story there. I just don't know that him chasing Danielson is a story. And maybe him chasing John Moxley or MJF is a story, and you kind of just go, you know, you go to Danielson and then you go to MJF, and then later on, you know, down the road, you go back to John Moxley again. But given the circumstances, and I said this as the show was going on, I go with Moxley here. You know, I think you stop playing around with, all right, well, hey, we want to get it into this guy's hands, then we want to get into that guy's hands, and I want this guy to kind of be the face of the company. And it's like, you know what? If Moxley's the guy that's delivering that promo in the middle of the ring to start the show after the most chaotic 3 days in AEW's history, and maybe AEW's history ever, if he's that guy, to me, he's the guy that gets the belt. He's the guy that kind of gives balance back to things, and then you go on from there. You can have a good John Moxley MJF program after that, and okay, maybe if he drops the belt to MJF, great. If he gets super hot, okay, maybe you keep it on him. But I just think you got to put the belt on the guy who's your biggest star right now. And it's not that Danielson's not a big star, but Moxley's just more front and center. And so I'm going with him here, but how about you?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would do too. And there's so many stories in there. Like you've got Moxley and MJF who could take up, you know, several months. And then you've got Moxley and Danielson, and they're both in the Blackpool Combat Club. And what happens with that group if Danielson's the number one contender? Like, there's a lot of different things and scenarios that you could go through. You could even go back to Jericho and Moxley again if you really wanted to. So
Page and
there's
Moxley
multiple.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, there's multiple stories there to tell with Moxley. Not that there isn't with other guys, but Moxley's the one where it's like, I sit here and say, you know, Moxley and MJF, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see what they can do. Oh, Moxley and Danielson, I'd like to see what they can do. You know, really, Moxley and anybody, I'd like to see what they can do because Moxley's been so good over the course of the summer in the role that he's been in. So if it were me, if I were in Tony's spot, I would go back to Moxley.
Yeah, I would too. A lot of people agree with you, Ryan, that, hey, you know, it's time for Danielson. And it's not this kind of notion of going to Moxley is not an indictment on Danielson. It's more of a, you know, it's Moxley's time. It's been Moxley's time and hasn't really been treated like that. And it should be. So that's kind of more so my feelings on it. All right. Let's see here. Let's go to 310. 310, state your name. You just buzzed in and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, this is Harry from Anaheim, California. How you guys doing tonight?
Good, Harry. Thanks for calling. Really appreciate it. What'd you think of AEW Dynamite?
Well, unfortunately, the show is still live here because it's I'm West Coast, so it's 8:20.
Right.
So I just saw, and I don't have a feed of you know, so I'm watching MJF basically. The main thing I wanted to ask you guys, I tuned into the show and I heard you talking about the title tournament. I don't know if you've covered this or not, so if you have, I apologize. But I'm just curious, what do you guys think about? Is there any chance of either Sammy Guevara or Darby Allin getting it just to try to promote one of those pillars of AEW that they like so much? And I know it may not be the time, but after all the drama with Punk and the Young Bucks, it might be kind of refreshing. Like, I get Moxley and everything, but it might just be kind of refreshing to put on like a true blue AEW original, for lack of a better term. And I think Darby Allin is so talented and has had such a bad year. He is stuck in these meaningless six-man tag matches. He, you know, ever since Cody left, he really hasn't had a chance to prove what he can do. And he's so good that kind of giving him this AEW title run out of nowhere might be a spark. It might be different. Him and MJF had that great match a couple years ago on pay-per-view. I'm just curious what you guys think about kind of giving the ball to Darby as just a total out of the blue, you know, understudy and just being like, all right, run with it. What can you do?
Well, okay, so I would say definitely no to Sammy Guevara for sure.
Okay,
you know,
sure.
He's just not in a place to just to do that right now. I think his character is a mess. I don't think he's really getting real heel heat, and he's just obnoxious more than anything. But maybe that's just my personal opinion. With Darby, With Darby, though,
yeah, I sign off that he's obnoxious AF. Yeah.
Okay. So you're seconding that.
Yeah.
With Darby Allin, it's, gosh, I mean, I guess it just sounds kind of mean to say, but not, no, I don't like, because he's had this bad year. I don't think you, or if you kind of net out that, okay, hey, Darby Allin's had this bad year. Boy, it'd be nice to see him, you know, not have a bad year. I don't think you put the world title on him to try to fix that problem. You know, I think what you do is you get him on a journey to that title. I mean, I think that's where the money is in Darby Allin, like him chasing down that title. You know, kind of like Daniel Bryan in the WWE, like the guy who you never thought would really win the title is now going to win it, and it takes time to tell that story. And so since that's where the money is, Mike, in my eyes, yeah, you may want to put the title on Darby to kind of like shock the system a bit. But in this instance, I think it's just kind of that shock. And then then your company's really kind of out of whack because, you know, you don't have the belt in, you know, on your top star. So I like Darby Allin as an act too. I think he's got, you know, I think he's kind of been misused this year in particular, as you said, but I don't think you fix that by giving him the company's biggest prize either. Mike, where are you at?
Yeah, I think I heard Triple H say this in an interview once, but I believe it as well. You know, I'm a firm believer in the belt can't make the person has to make the belt. And I think if they were to put it on Darby right now, it would be them trying to have the belt make the guy. Because I don't think he's there yet. Like, Darby could be there down the road, but he's really not at that point, I think, yet, where you can in this situation put the championship on him and say, hey, we're going to ride it with you over the next, you know, 6 months. I think it's one of the reasons, honestly, why Hangman struggled a little bit as champion, too, is you had the belt on someone who didn't feel like the biggest star in the company. You know, the belt should go on the biggest star in the company, and or at least one of, right? And I think it's one of the things that Hangman struggled with over the course of his run. In, you know, here's him holding this championship on the same show as Bryan Danielson, Chris Jericho, Jon Moxley, and CM Punk. And it always felt like it was something off, because it felt like he was just a notch below those guys, and yet he was the champion. So I think if you were to put the belt on Darby right now, even though you're missing some key guys in Omega and Punk, it would still feel that way. It would still feel like, you know what, he has the potential to reach that level, but he is kind of a notch below guys like Moxley and Jericho and Danielson. So it would feel too much, I think, like they were trying to have the belt make the guy, which more often than not, like in with the exception of a couple of rare instances, I think usually it doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. And Harry, I just think that there's something in Darby chasing that title eventually. So if you want to get him into a position where it's like, hey, okay, we think we want to go with him now. There's some momentum there. Well, then you can do it. But I think it's got to be a longer term. I'm not saying, like, you know, 3-year thing, but it's got to be a longer term angle, because I think you want him to build up that groundswell of support and not just kind of over a 2-week span, you know, give a quick jolt, you know, to the audience. I think you want more sustained momentum. So, but back to you for any follow-up comments or, you know, another question or comment in general.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, I totally agree with you guys about the long-term planning thing. That I'm not in disagreement of. So then my question would be to both of you is that, so Darby's in this tournament to lose, right? So he's either going to lose to Sammy, which, okay, whatever. Either of those guys are going to lose to Moxley, right? So then it's like, why is he even here, right? Because he was in one of those 20-person casino battle royals to get a shot at the interim title of Jon Moxley. He lost that to Brody King. It's like you keep putting him in these positions where, because my other point of this, so that's my first thought, is like he's in this tournament to lose. Great, I'm a Darby Allin fan. I'm going to see him get his butt kicked again and not be the champion. Starting to lose faith in this guy. My other point is that if he beats Sammy Guevara, if he beats Jon Moxley clean, if he beats Chris Jericho clean in the middle over those 3 weeks, and you tell this story of this guy has had the most amazing out of nowhere September, and then there's MJF with his chip being like, yeah, you think you're hot stuff, you beat these two out of three washed up WWE guys while I'm AEW. I think if you have now until November for full gear, that could be something. Just plain devil's advocate, because you've both made a lot of good points, but just if Moxley, Jericho, and to a very lesser extent Guevara, all got it in their head to make Darby, I think they could do it in the month. Otherwise, we're seeing another Darby Allin start-stop push where maybe he beats Sammy, he has a good match with Moxley, and then he loses and he goes into the dark Sting rampage abyss where we don't see him again for 2 months. And just as a fan of Darby Allin, it's like, if you want to go with him, you've had 2.5 years, really go with him. He's been in the exact same place, running in place for 2.5 years. So that's sort of my that's my follow-up, guys.
Fair point. I mean, it's a fair point, and I think really it stems on, you know, your perspective on Darby. Like, I just don't see him as that guy. Like, I don't think he's in that spot right now. He's in this spot where it's okay. You can get kind of close to the main event, and you can get kind of close to the championship, but you're not gonna get there yet. And look, not everybody can be there. Not everybody can be at that level. And so, you know, different guys have different roles to play, and you hope that, you know, if you're Darby, that you can eventually get there. But I just don't think Tony Khan is looking at things right now, especially right now, and going, okay, you know, we really need to pull the trigger on this Darby Allin championship run. It's not that he can't pull it off, and it's not that the guys around him in this tournament can't pull it off. he's just not that guy in this company right now. He's the guy that he is, which I think is, you know, it doesn't have to mean doing jobs, but I think it can mean doing the right jobs. And doing a job to Jon Moxley in a world title tournament, like, I think they can pull that off also, Mike. Like, I think they can make Darby look really good coming out of that, and not protect him, so to speak, but, you know, just that he's a, you know, a viable opponent for Jon Moxley, and then maybe you revisit it later. But I guess the root for me is, while you're right, Harry, all that stuff I think can be executed effectively. He's not that guy right now. Mike?
Sure.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he feels to me like, I've made this comparison in the past, like, he feels like he's AEW Sean Waltman, in the sense where, like, he can have a good match with anybody. Like, he can literally have a really good match with almost anybody on the roster. Big guys, small guys, it doesn't matter. You can put him in there with most guys, and he's going to have a pretty compelling match because of the way that he bumps and the risk that he takes and the type of style that he wrestles. But is he ever a guy that you're going to put in, just cement into the main event? I don't know. He's a guy that you might be able to have visit there every once in a while, at least in the position that he's in now. He's a guy that I think you can have visit there and kind of bounce in and out, but I don't know that he's the guy that they're just going to say, hey, we're going to put the belt on you and go with you here. The start and stop push may be kind of the spot that he's in for a while, in the same way that you know, Waltman was in that spot, both in WCW and WWE, where he never was able to kind of crack himself above that and burst through that glass ceiling of having that start and stop push while being able to have excellent matches with anybody. And that's not a bad spot to be in, where, you know, a guy comes in, like a guy like Punk. Punk comes into the company, he needs to have a good match with somebody, he needs to look good in his first in his first match back in 6 years or 7 years, whatever it was. And what do? It's Darby. Darby's the one that was given the task of having that match, because I think everybody knew it's going to be good because he's good.
Yeah, no, it's well said. And Waltman is a good comparison. And I think if you look at him and I mean, look, you know, there's a lot of guys on that level. I mean, there's more guys on that level, you know, in WWE and AEW and, you know, across the history of wrestling than there are, like, at the tip top, you know. So, you know, it just happens. And, you know, if you, like, Darby can make a damn good career for himself, you know, doing what he's doing right now. And that's not, look, it's not to say that he's not going to ever get built up or get kind of that momentum. But, yeah, he's just not there right now, Harry, I think. And hey, you know, weirder things have happened on in AEW, as we saw Sunday night. So I guess I'm not you can't rule it out completely. Harry, back to you.
No, and the Sean Waltman one is a really good comparison. I never thought of him in that role before, but I totally see it. It's funny. I view Darby Allin as like CM Punk in 2008 WWE, where it's like, you know, he was like maybe going to win Money in the Bank, and then they gave him that really bad world title run where he wrestled JBL and then lost it. Like, I'm a Darby fan. I feel like there's something there. I feel like this is another opportunity for Darby to, like, pretend to get the push in X-Pac thing, right? You're going to wrestle Steve Austin, but you're going to lose to him. But I get the thing, you're wrestling Steve Austin, but it's still, you're losing to him. You know, it's like, you're, you know, CM Punk's first match back, you lose to him. You know, it's just, it'd be nice if Darby could, like, beat one of these big main event guys rather than Brody King and stuff like that. But I really appreciate you guys letting me fly the Darby Allin fan flag here for a little bit. I appreciate the show, and have a great rest of your night, guys.
Thanks, Harry. I appreciate the call. And, you know, if in 2 weeks or whatever it is, Darby Allin's carrying around that AEW World Championship, you're going to have to call back and gloat.
Hey, if that's the case, I need to put, like, a bet down on one of these betting sites, too. I will definitely do that. Thanks again, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Very good, Harry. Thanks. Have a good one. All right. We will wrap up our caller portion of the show with none other than Javier, which means I get to play this. It gets me every time. Javier, welcome on into the show. Thanks for calling as usual. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight, man?
Hey, Zach. Hey, Mike. It's been way too long, Zach. It just happens that the days that I'm you know, take off happen to coincide the days that you were. I started feeling back. It's like, man, Zach is going to think I have something against him. I mean, I do, but I don't want you to think it.
Right. It's a secret.
And
I get it.
And Mike, it's always good to talk to you, man. You and Andrew are my third and fifth favorite PW Torch podcasters.
Oh my gosh!
But yeah,
I don't want to make the brawling joke again. But I could. I just want to let everybody know that I could make it here too. So, but go ahead, Amir. How did they do?
Man, overall, I thought the show was fine. I was a little bit distracted because I was doing some other stuff. So I wasn't really paying attention too much attention to the wrestling. That was more something I had in the background. But I enjoyed the MJF promo a lot. I got a lot of, you know, a big kick out of him, you know, pretending to be a babyface and the stuff that he was saying. I would have been fine if they decided to go in on him as a babyface and just not be really sure what he was. But when, you know, when Moxley came out, I'm like, okay, they're gonna set right the ship. And Moxley immediately calling him out on his BS is like, you know, he didn't even waste time. But that Moxley promo though, that was, I think as the kids would say, fire. the thing about it is, if you listen to what he said, I mean, he does take a shot at CM Punk during that promo. A very oblique one, but if you like really understand like the history of AEW and the stuff that, you know, because he doesn't really necessarily put over the championship. I mean, he does, but it's not, that wasn't the point of it. He basically used the championship as reference to who's carrying the company. So when he then starts talking about the championship, he's actually just talking about the company, not really the championship. He mentions how when the company was formed by the Bucks and he was part of the, you know, part of it too, the early days, that it was to get away from political BS. And I believe that is mostly a reference to the CM Punk side of things. And, you know, because he particularly says, you know, that should die with the old wrestlers is pretty much what, what he said there. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. And then mentioning that, you know, when he's talking about the, you know, because he says, you know, talking about carrying the ball. And I think it was smart of him not to actually say it as the title, because he's, you know, there are two meanings to what he's saying. He's saying not only that, you know, that the championship is the person who's going to carry the company, and that, you know, I did like him doing Dante from Clerks, I'm not even supposed to be here today reference, that he was supposed to be on vacation. Yeah. And the fact that he does come back because of that he has to, you know, that he has the opportunity to carry the company, and it's something that he wants. Something he wants to do is that he wants to be, you know, there to lift the company for the rest of the people on there. Bryce Rensburg on Twitter tweeted out, "I would give John Moxley the keys to my car and my house if he wanted them. I would run into a volcano if he asked. No questions asked."
Well, here, real quick on that, because I want to jump in. I think you've touched on why I think that promo was not just like really good, but effective for the moment too, because it called out the real world stuff. If you're paying attention to that and you care about that and you were interested in seeing somebody respond to that, it did that, but indirectly, you know what I mean? And so,
yeah,
what the heck that was, but it also, if you didn't know anything about it, you could just put AEW championship into the context of what John Moxley is saying, and there you go, you're understanding, you know, you're right there understanding what, you know, what's going on in that exact moment. So it was a really fun balancing act to watch. I'd love to know how much of it was, you know, kind of scripted out and how much he just kind of went within the ring. But, I agree with where you're going with it. It was really well done, well constructed on his part to kind of play, play both sides. But Javier, go ahead.
Well, and he was emotional. You can tell that he was emotional cutting that promo, because it was very – you could tell how important that is for him. And I think that the promo was not just meant for the audience. I think it was also meant for the wrestlers in the back. You know, the rah-rah, you know, let's get this together kind of thing. So I thought that, I mean, it's basically set up. It's got to be set up for him to win, because some people mentioned Bryan Danielson. I think Bryan Danielson is a different spot. If you've been watching what he's been doing when he's not wrestling, I think that he's at the point where he just wants to wrestle. I don't think he's got any interest in being involved in the promoting of anything. I think it's all been the art of what's going on in the ring and to use that to get over other talent. I don't think he wants to be the one to basically carry the company, put it on his shoulders, and have that burden. I think it's his stuff right now really is just the pure artistry of the thing, which, you know, because I think his promos have kind of been a little bit on the odd side lately, and it's all about just wrestling for him. And, you know, the other thing is that MJF also has previous history with Moxley. So, you know, it would make sense that if, because you need to have a person. I mean, the way that the MJF returned, he needs to have a personal issue with somebody. And of the people who are involved in the tournament, the ones that he has the most personal issues is with Jericho, who's, you know, a heel, so that makes no sense. You know, that won't work. And Moxley. So it would make sense you give it to Moxley. MJF comes after Moxley, maybe beats Moxley for it. That's when the previous caller said, you know, you could throw in a Darby Allin chasing MJF, because they also have issues. They're also pillars of the company. I don't think that you give it to Darby, but you could run a program with them, and that could be his first challengers or one of his earlier challengers. And I think that is – and if, you know, Punk does stick around and he comes back, then he can come after the title from MJF. So, you know, if he's not, you know, gone. So you know,
right.
we'll see how that goes. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think John Moxley takes this, and yeah, Mike, I think you're on the same page with that too. With the end game kind of maybe being MJF, but also I think if you're Tony Khan at this point, you know, see what's working and just go that way for a little while. Like, I know, you know, Tony Khan has planned out the first four champions of the company, right? And, you know, he kind of books long-term, and I think that's good. I mean, I really think, generally speaking, that's good. But given the circumstances here and what happened, you know, I think you kind of got to just lean on that audience. They'll tell you which way to go. And then for a while, that's what you do. And I think Moxley's kind of the head of that snake, if you will. Mike, any comments on what Javier was talking about?
No, I agree. You know, I just gotta reiterate that I agree there. I mean, I think, you know, like I said earlier, he had 48 hours to put this show together. I don't think he has anything, you know, set in concrete. There was nothing even, you know, booked with ink here. Everything was booked in pencil, and I think he's going to see what the reactions are going forward. From what we've seen, it should be Moxley, both not only tonight, but like what we saw leading up to All Out. Moxley seems like he's the guy, but if something happens in the next 2 weeks and it becomes very clear that it should be someone else, I think he'll go in that direction. I think it's fluid. I don't even think that Tony's 100% sure what he's going to do at Arthur Ashe Stadium yet, who's going to go over and win the title. I think if you were to ask him right now, he would probably agree with us that if he made the decision today, he'd go Moxley. But like you said, that there's no guarantee that that's how he feels 2 weeks from now.
Yep. Javier, back to you. What else is in your notes tonight?
On the other thing that good reason to go with Moxley, and this also applies to Jericho, is Mike, since you covered Impact, how many times did their world title situation get screwy? Bunch of times, right?
Oh, like 500, yeah. It felt like every other week at one.
Yeah. And who do they always go to when it got screwy? your stable person, which was Eddie Edwards. So, you know, and then he would hold it, and then they would build something up with whoever they're going to go with down the line, because he was your workhorse, and he was your, you know, he was the staid hand that basically brings stability to what's going on, which is why I don't think you go, you know, with a Darby Allin, you know, kind of situation, because that doesn't bring stability. I think the two greatest options you have there are Moxley and Jericho, you know, because, you know, Jericho being one of your top guys, although I don't think that, you know, his current gimmick is to run to be at the top. And then, you know, and I mean, Danielson is a good idea, but I just don't think that Danielson is there mentally. It's interesting setup, because it looks like you are going to get Darby versus Moxley, and, you know, you just telling the story of, because, I mean, they did that the story, you know, between him and Darby and Cody, where he kept getting closer and closer and closer to beating Cody, and he's previously wrestled Moxley, and you can just keep doing the story of, you know, Darby getting closer and closer to overcoming Moxley. So interesting. I mean, I think they pivoted well, which is usually not something you can say about Tony Khan, because I think Tony Khan is a good strategist. Zach, you mentioned that, you know, he's, you know, long-term, you know, good idea, you know, book, you know, four champions in advance and stuff like that. I don't think he's that great when it comes to the tactics, to swerves, or, you know, when you have someone injured, because you could tell in how he tells the stories where he'll, you know, book something else to cover for the injury, but once the injury is over, we're going to get back on track to where the story is, no matter where, you know, the rest of the wrestlers are, or where, you know, the fans are going. He doesn't tend to pivot too well, or he ends up going back to, you know, I want this to be the main event of this pay-per-view. So, you know, even if we're 2 weeks out, you know, and we missed all these weeks of build because once somebody was injured, we're still going to have that match, and we're just going to build it in 2 weeks. I thought this was a good bounce back from, you know, this weekend.
I do too. And yeah, so much of, you know, being a successful booker is kind of like being able to read your audience and feel the moment while, you know, having a plan too, you know, like that, but one that you are comfortable and confident in deviating from if you need to. And I think, yeah, we've seen the planning part of Tony Khan and that booking, you know, when it works out, but you know, the notion of, as you said, Javier, that pivot, you know, we haven't seen that, you know, we haven't, and then I think you can point to, you know, exact, you know, some exact moments where, you know, where you can say, all right, well, you know, he went this way, but maybe, you know, maybe he should have gone with the hot act. You know, I think, you know, FTR, that's jumping out of my head, where it's like, you have this hot team that, you know, yeah, you probably didn't foresee FTR kind of getting the momentum that they did, but they did, and you didn't really go with it. You know, I think, you know, Britt Baker as a babyface back, you know, in the middle of last year was something I think you could have capitalized on if done effectively, but you didn't, and so now she's kind of in the same spot. Even you know, Sunday at All Out, you know, where you're like, all right, well, we want to go with CM Punk, but man, you know, this John Moxley thing is pretty hot. Should we take a look at that? And I'm not arguing one way or the other in that instance, but it's just that, you know, is he going through that process? And I think if he's not, he should be, because, you know, you want to read the tea leaves and read that momentum and, you know, the Acclaimed. It sounds like, you know, it seems like he's doing that, Mike, but I think that's key to him growing as a booker of a national wrestling company.
Yeah, I think he's doing it with the Acclaim, and he's done with other acts too. You know, he did it with Orange Cassidy 2 years ago when I didn't really understand it. It wasn't my cup of tea. It wasn't my favorite thing on the show. But when fans were first allowed back in the buildings, Orange Cassidy was getting huge reactions. I think it may have even been before the pandemic. You know, Orange Cassidy was getting big reactions. So Orange Cassidy had a big role in the show. He had a pay-per-view match with Jericho because of the type of crowd reaction he was getting. Like, he has shown an ability to be cognizant of what's going on and what type of reactions people are getting. And he's probably also looking at metrics along with that. He knows what merch sales are. He knows, you know, he's getting minute by minute ratings. So he knows when people are tuning in and when people are tuning out. And if there is an act that the people seem to be interested in, he has not been shy about making sure he goes in that direction.
Yeah. Well said. Javier, back to you. Any, what else?
Yeah. My concern with the Swerve and Acclaim thing, it reminds me of the Thunder Rosa Britt Baker thing where they had Britt beat her at the pay-per-view because he wanted to book the title change in Thunder Rosa's hometown. And I think the widely held belief is that it would have been a much bigger deal had the title change happened at the pay-per-view when people were ready for it than having Thunder Rosa lose and then, you know, get a rematch like 2 weeks later in her hometown where she wins. And I understand the reasoning for him to do it. And the thing about the Acclaimed and Swerve and Lee, I refuse to call them by the team name, like Wade does, because I think it's stupid. The idea being that it almost feels like part of the story, particularly since they've been bumping into each other, is a dissolution of Swerve and Lee and a feud between the two of them. So I think that takes some of it away from Acclaimed, and also like it was. Can you capture the lightning in the bottle you had at that arena with the Acclaimed in Arthur Ashe? I don't know. So, that would be a concern I would have.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a valid concern. I just don't know if, to be honest, I don't know that the Acclaimed winning the tag titles was in the cards at all. Until that reaction in Chicago. Like, I'm not basing that on any kind of reporting or anything, but, you know, it seemed to me that, I know that they've been getting, steady, better pops, stronger pops, louder, but, I was in the building for All Out, and, I mean, you would have thought these guys were, the hottest act that AEW had. I mean, it was loud, people were invested, and so that may have came out of the blue, Mike, in terms of wow, okay, we need to go with this now, and so let's do the rematch. But I don't, because that reaction was so strong, but also a bit surprising in just how passionate it was, Tony Khan might be looking and going, well, okay, I guess we're going to do this now based on that, and I don't know if we can recapture the magic, but we don't really have any choice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it could be. And it is interesting because, they didn't really explain why they were getting a rematch, which was the only thing I didn't like about what they did tonight is I think some sort of explanation would have been helpful, especially when, we've had instances where champions do not get automatic rematches in AEW. That happens frequently. But now, a tag team that lost their title match is getting an automatic rematch. It seems very kind of strange from a booking standpoint. I wish they came up with some sort of reason why. Could be an indication, like you said before, that maybe Tony didn't know that that's what he was doing on Sunday. And the reaction that they got on Sunday led him to say, hey, you know what, we got to change course here and we got to maybe go with the Acclaimed, which would explain why they lost on Sunday and are now getting a rematch. And it doesn't really make sense from a storyline standpoint, but Tony made the decision, hey, we have to go in this direction now because the Acclaimed's the hot act. I don't know, but I would have liked to see some sort of explanation on why, because we've seen champions not get rematches and now we have, non-champions that are losing their title shots that are getting rematches.
Yes, Adam Page is very confused as to how Acclaimed got their title shot now after not getting hits for so long. Javier, you tried to jump in there. Go ahead.
Yeah, they did kind of explain it. Whether it fits in the consistency that they've shown or not, they did mention that they came so close that that's the reason why they came so close to beating Lee and Strickland, that's why they're given another chance. Take that. I'm not saying it's a good reason, but they did say that's why they're getting a shot.
Okay, there you have
Fair
it.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Amir. Anything else for us tonight before we
I think
Wade's going to be wondering where the show.
what did you guys think of the Jungle Boy thing? Because that was one I only caught, like, you know, obliquely. I used that word twice today. I shouldn't have done that. I only caught that kind of, like, not paying attention to it. So what did you guys think of it didn't sit well with me when he basically said, you know, I've been carrying Luchasaurus' ass. That kind of feels more like something they do in a heel promo, which I think kind of has been a problem with Jungle Boy lately.
Yeah, that was my problem with it, too. Like, there was just a couple things in there where, well, first off, I think the delivery was okay. Like, I think Jungle Boy, and since the Christian program started, even though the content of his promos were, you know, questionable and in some cases, I think, ineffective, but the delivery and, you know, his just ability and kind of confidence in cutting promos, I think has grown leaps and bounds. And so in that regard tonight, I thought he was fine in terms of how he said what he said. But I really don't like the idea, you know, that of Jungle Boy saying that he's going to, like, end Christian's life, you know, like, because we know you're not going to do that. I'm a big believer in don't put that kind of thing out there. And then, like, the idea of, like, carrying Luchasaurus, like, if you've watched AEW and you've watched the Jurassic Express act, like, you know, Luchasaurus was always, like, the heavy for Jungle Boy. So it was kind of like, you know, in a way, like, the other way around. And so, and there's so many people that kind of know that and experience that. I think you could have just played a different card, Mike, to get to the same spot without kind of just, like, the whole carrying thing. Like, just come up with another, you know, way to tell the same narrative. I think there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, they were kind of forced into the whole situation of the pay-per-view with Christian being hurt. I mean, that match, it was what it was. I wished it were more, but, you know, injuries kind of dictated it. And, yeah, I thought Jungle Boy's promo tonight was interesting. was interesting. It wouldn't have been what I would have gone with. I understand what they were trying to accomplish there, and they're obviously going to run that match back once Christian's healthy again, or at least it seems that way. But, you know, I also don't know how long he's going to be out for. I mean, if this is – how much of this is going to cool down, too, if he's out, you know, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, if he's out 3 or 4 months, I mean, I think it's good to – you know, they've got the Luchasaurus – Jungle Boy feud that they, you know, are going to go to. I just wish to set it up better, just better than that. Like, the idea of him carrying them, like, okay, you guys are, like, you know, brothers. Like, you know, tell – there's, I think there's just a deeper personal story to tell there. So, Javier, I agree. Not, you know, not a fan of the content portion of that promo, even though I think it was delivered well.
Yeah, and the last thing I had was, which I actually just thought of, it felt to me, I don't know if it felt the same to you guys, but it kind of felt to me that the Hangman Page, Bryan Danielson match, normally it almost feels like both, when you have a match like that, both guys get something out of it. It kind of felt like Hangman didn't really get as much out of it. Do you think he was just, you know, booked to lose, like, in this just flat-out clean way? And it wasn't like, you know, they didn't really feel like the commentary made a big deal about it because of, you know, his, you know, even though he was involved in the fight and stuff, he is involved in the greater story of things that are going on. Do you think they just, you know, lost, you know, he just lost his, you know, I don't want to say punishment, but, yeah, punishment.
I you know what? I thought the same exact thing. I've got a note right here that I wrote down. I kind of do. I mean, it felt like that. Like, it didn't feel like, to your point, like, okay, we're going to have this great match here, and both guys will be better, even though one guy has to win. Like, this is a pretty, like, definitive Adam Page loss. And, you know, as being the guy, you know, who kind of, you know, quote unquote started this so a while back with the Double or Nothing promo, It's ironic that he's the one, you know, still around, but that's how serious, you know, I think, you know, fighting is. You know, you can't hit other people. You learn that when you're really, really young. And so, you know, it tells me that, like, okay, you know, Tony Khan probably could have lived with, you know, the chatter and maybe could have figured out how to work with the guys, you know, without it getting physical, but it did, but Paige wasn't involved with that. So he's still around, but it's like, okay, you're around, but hey, look, man, like, you know, I'm going to give you the only power play that I really can. And you're tapping out to Danielson tonight. Like, to me, it's certainly plausible. And it definitely crossed my mind. Mike, did it cross yours?
It did. Yeah. You know, as the match was going on and we didn't know who was going to win, I kept thinking to myself, you know, this is going to send quite a message if Paige wins this match. You know, like, that's all I kept thinking of. Like, if Paige wins this match, that tells you exactly where Tony's at as far as, you know, who he's maybe leaning towards in the whole situation. I don't think Paige losing the match necessarily means that he's leaning towards Punk's side of things. But, you know, if Hangman were booked to win, I think that would be a pretty clear indication that Tony was on, you know, Team Elite, let's say. Yeah. So, but and it wasn't like Hangman was squashed here either. Like, he didn't look fantastic. You know, the match was definitely about Danielson getting over, but, you know, it didn't strike me as anything out of the ordinary either, other than just one guy had to win and one guy had to lose.
Yeah, and this is a, you know, I understand. I mean, you have to trot this match out if you're going to have this world title tournament, but, you know, their first two matches were so kind of epic, you know, the hour-long draw and then the rematch after that. Like, yeah, I mean, and this just didn't live in that ballpark, I don't think. Like, it was there, it was a match, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't on that level. So, you know, it's not like Paige lost his classic there either. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of petty when you think about the gravity of everything that went down around him. But at the same time, you know, I think, you know, if this is the start of Tony Khan kind of throwing some weight around what it needs to be thrown around and remind people whose company it is, like, I think it's a smart move. But Javier, back to you for any follow-up.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think, yeah. Trying to think what else happened today that was worth talking about. This is pretty much it. Always good talking to you, Mike. And yeah, Zach, I guess it's good talking to you too.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see you later.
Thanks, we'll do Javier, something at some point. We'll do something at some point. Yes, maybe some pay-per-view tickets.
Okay. Put some butts in seats. Yeah, thank you. everybody, go VIP and check out Javier's VIP audio show on New Japan, New Japan Pride Podcast. If you saw the G1 this year, Javier did a day-by-day or, you know, clumps of days analysis on those shows, as well as regular New Japan coverage as well. But go VIP, check out that show, pwtorch.com/goVIP. All right, so Mike, we'll wrap the caller portion there. I want to hit a couple emails here. We'll kind of rapid fire these because the show's been going long. The first one is from David in Washington, D.C. He says, the announcers didn't acknowledge it, but I thought I heard a voice for his "you were right" chant for MJF, which I took as a reference to Punk. It came after MJF referred to his earlier promo. Looks like Punk's nuclear heat extends to the AEW fan base as well as the locker room. I can't imagine he'll be back. On a less serious note, Jericho gave away the finish to Danielson and Hangman by talking about wrestling Danielson next week in his promo. Yes, he did. I thought that was just hilarious. It's a... Like, it's a small thing, but it's like, man, Tony Khan just cannot buy some luck right now. Like, you know, like,
know.
It's small and meaningless, but it's, you know, it's still there. But you were right, Chance.
I actually thought I missed the match.
Which one? Oh.
I'm watching it downstairs in my office, and my son had an issue upstairs. He needed my help with something, so I went upstairs to help him with something. And then I came back down, and I saw Jericho's promo, and I was like, wait, I'm like, Anyway, I was gone for like 8 minutes here. They were going to commercial when I went upstairs, so half of the time I was away had to have been the commercial. Did I miss the match? Like, there's no way I missed the match. And I actually went to the live report on the website to figure out. I'm like, no, wait a minute, it's not here. But then I'm rewinding it on my DVR, going, I swear he said he's facing Danielson next week, and of course he did. So I'm like, okay. But there was a good 10 minutes where I was like, did I miss it? Like, was it that quick? It couldn't have been that quick.
Yes. Did my life shut off for 10 minutes and? I don't have any recollection.
Either that, or, you know, like what we were just talking about before, too, I was like, wow, I go, did they bury Hangman in like a 30-second squash?
Right,
like,
yep.
Like, what happened? And then, you know, it was I was very confused there for about 10 minutes.
Yes. Did you catch the You Were Right chance?
I actually did not, no.
Okay, yeah, they were there. I thought I heard the same thing. But there was a couple of different moments, Mike, where I thought, like, okay, Tony Khan got a little bit booed, you know, Adam Page,
there
were some boos there, you know, but then, you know, obviously the You Were Right chant is like, you know, a negative reaction for Punk. So I think the, you know, the AEW audience is kind of like reacting how I feel in regards to, you know, what happened from a viewer perspective, where it's like, these grown adults couldn't get their stuff together, you know, like, okay. Negative reaction, at least for the time being. It seemed that way. Okay, we'll go next here to okay, we'll go to John in Tennessee. Ring of Honor is never getting a TV deal, so AEW really needs to get rid of all these ROH titles. Just ridiculous. The main event was fine, but Hangman versus Daniel Bryan should be the main event anytime they share a ring. Has there been any word on Tony Khan's plans for ROH? Thanks for the great content. Everyone go VIP. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Yeah, Mike, I enjoyed the main event a lot. Like, I thought it was a really good match, and I think putting over Garcia was the way to go, you know, for the story, but also for the circumstances. You're sending your audience home happy after a tough couple days. But yeah, I mean, is the ROH pure championship bigfooting the world title tournament? Or, you know, I didn't look at it that way. I kind of just looked at it as, okay, this is a ratings thing. You know, they want it at the top of the second hour or near the top of the second hour. That's kind of how I viewed it. But I mean, in principle, I agree. Their ROH titles are too confusing and have to go. But I don't know that tonight was a slight on the world title to try to paint, you know, the ROH titles as something more important. Where are you at?
I don't think it was either. I think, like you said, it was probably just a strategic move. He wanted to have the world title tournament match at that 9 o'clock spot for whatever reason. I mean, I'm interested in the quarter hours to see what actually happened there in that last 15 minutes from 9:45 to 10 Eastern. Like, how much were those guys able to hold an audience? And at the same time, the Danielson Page match went, I think, like almost three segments. So were they able to hold an audience over the course of three commercial breaks as well? It's something I'm interested in. But yeah, I don't think it was any sort of them trying to position that title as being more important than the world title. I think it was just hometown guys going to win a title in his hometown. That's, we got to go and put that last because it might be hard for something to follow it.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Good stuff. We'll finish up with JB in Detroit. He goes, hi, it's JB from Detroit. After all the turmoil and strife since Sunday night within AEW, it got me thinking, is there a certain immeasurable value to some of the raw, uncensored, outlaw-like aspect of AEW? Certain fans have been complaining for years that the companies feel bigger than the individual wrestlers, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that because of this is true, new stars are never really built. Since the late 90s, early 2000s, I can't remember such a feeling of unpredictability in a wrestling company. Granted, I admit this isn't always a good thing if it spills into such recklessness that real violence is regularly breaking out and storylines that are being built are getting stepped on. But if this real-life energy and passion can be reasonably harnessed, I think it can be utilized in a very powerful and positive fashion. Throw to you first. What do you think?
If you can find a way to make money with it, absolutely. I mean, there's Can you imagine if you know, Brett and Sean were able to work together and do some sort of business in 1998 after the screw job? Like, it would have been huge. And, you know, same thing here. If they could actually figure out a way to make some money with it and get those guys in the ring and do a match, it'd be unbelievable. So, you know, I don't think it's bad, especially. I mean, and there's been cases in the past where real life issues have crept into matches and they've done pretty good business. Edge and Matt Hardy, you know, comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Of a real personal situation that they were able to turn into a piece of business in the ring. So, you know, it's happened before. I mean, I think you are kind of walking a fine line. You don't want it happening all the time, or else your locker room could end up in some turmoil, as we've seen over the last 3 days, or really over the last, you know, probably 2 or 3 weeks. There's yeah. been issues with, you know, on the women's side, and then Kingston and Sammy had their issues. Like, it's, there's been a couple of different issues here, you know, over the last month or so, but you don't want too much of it. But at the end of the day, like, I think anytime something real happens, there's real emotions involved. If guys are willing to put the personal stuff aside and maybe use some of that in some sort of program, it's only going to be good, because it's going to make it, it's going to just make it feel more real. It's going to blur some of those lines.
Yeah. And I think it also will paint, you know, it just paints the draws as the wrestlers, as these personalities, you know, that these characters that you don't know what they're going to do. Like, and not just, oh, I like AEW, I'll tune in. I think there's like a passive, passive passion there. Whereas, you know, if you're booking stars that really feel like stars and feel like they're running the show, you know, that there's really, really strong value there. But I think in the end, to me, it's, you know, you can't do it unless you can do it. You know what I mean? And it's, that's a simple answer, but it's like Tony Khan has to have the capability and the strength and the presence to be able to manage that type of thing. You know, Vince McMahon, obviously he had many, many, many faults, but, you know, he was ruthless. And so that helped him in these kinds of situations, in the Sean and Brett kind of situation. And it's not something that, you know, you necessarily are proud of, but in this business, you know, being able to drop the hammer, you know, on these personalities and on these, you know, on these guys that are stars, like, you have to be like, you know, not a special leader, but you have to be somebody that can deliver that. And, you know, Tony Khan's only been doing this for 3 years, you know? And so he has to have more control in that company. There's absolutely no question. But I just don't think, Mike, that he's developed yet, anyway, the capability to manage that situation, you know? And, you know, maybe it got so bad where you just couldn't do it. You know, I don't know. But it's certainly not the first time that there's been a fight backstage at a wrestling show between wrestling talent. And so, you know, I think there absolutely is money to be made here, but you can't do it unless, you know, your company is in a position where it can. And I just don't think that at the top right now, you know, I don't think he's experienced enough to be able to manage that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And it's one of the things that he's not, struggle might even be the wrong word. It's one of those things. It's a simple fact reality, though. Like, he's had to learn on the fly with a lot mm-hmm. of what he's doing. Like, I know he's been a fan for a very long time, just like all of us have, but he's never run a wrestling company before. So some of the stuff he's dealing with for the first time, and, you yeah. know, he's a guy that, as we talked about earlier, is pretty stretched thin as it is. You know, he's got like 4 full-time jobs. A sporting director for a Premier League team should be a 17-hour-a-day full-time job. So should be being the CEO of a professional wrestling company that has a national television deal. So should be, you know, his role with the Jaguars. Like, he's doing a lot of different things, and that I think even makes it harder and creates an environment where talent may not be happy all the time, because talent may feel like they don't have access to Tony because Tony's a busy guy and he's not even just busy running his wrestling company. He's also, you know, the GM of a soccer team and everything else that he's doing. And it's, I think this situation, and I think he tried to do it a few weeks ago, but I think this situation more than anything else should tell Tony that he needs to be more willing to delegate some of those responsibilities and be open to help. And I mean, obviously he needs to find people he trusts in order to delegate some of that responsibility, but it needs to happen at this point. Whether it's him giving up, you know, all those other jobs and only focusing on AEW, or whether it's him finding someone within AEW that can kind of help run the day-to-day issues that come up when you have a locker room the size that he has.
Yeah. Well said, man. All right, so we'll wrap on this. I didn't email it in, but I'm just curious as to your thoughts. CM Punk wrestled his last match.
Oh, man. I think if he has, I'll say this. If he has, it was his choice.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, I really don't feel like Tony's going to fire him. You know, I could see Punk being upset by the situation and just telling Tony, hey, I'm done. I'm not coming back. Or being upset about a suspension or whatever. You know, my belief, and who knows, because the investigation's not done, but I kind of feel like, especially from what we saw tonight too, because they were treated equally tonight. Both mm-hmm. parties had their titles stripped and their names not mentioned. Both parties had themselves removed from the opening credits of the show. I think whatever happens to the Bucks and Omega is going to happen to Punk, which is fair. That's what should happen. My question is whether or not Punk is willing to accept that, or is Punk going to say, this isn't worth it, I'm done.
That's a really good answer. A really good answer, and one that I agree with, and you know, has shades of gray in it, which I think is key here. Very good. All right, we'll wrap up on that note, Mike. Thanks so much. Before we really wrap up, though, let everybody know about your show and all that you do for the Torch. You've been a big part of the Torch for years, but you've got a really good thing going right now with Andrew and the PW Torch Daily Cast. So plug away.
Yeah, no, we've been doing it. We the show drops on Wednesdays. We record it on Tuesdays. I was trying to think, actually, earlier today when we started. I think we started in January of 16 covering
okay.
Impact, which would mean that we're coming up on 7 years of him and I doing a show together, which is crazy.
Wow. That's crazy. And you guys covered some years there for Impact. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I've had some recently, actually, somebody asked me this. They were like, how did it start? Do you guys know each other? You know, and I said, no, we've actually never met in person before. We've only ever met over Skype during the show. And we didn't even know we were doing the show. I think I got an email from Wade like 2 days before with, hey, do you want to do a, at the time it wasn't the Daily Cast, it was still the Live Cast. Do you want to do a Live Cast show on Thursdays after Impact? I have this kid, Andrew, who I think can host with you if you're interested. I said, yeah, sure, because I was already writing at the time. And we were thrown together like on 2 days' notice, and now I've been doing a show together for 7 years.
That rules. That's awesome.
I think going on 7 years. So it is really cool. But, yeah, the show drops on Wednesdays. We've covered, you know, multiple different companies over the course of our run here. But now we primarily focus on kind of previewing that week's AEW because we drop, you know, on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. People email us. You can email our show at alleliteaftershow@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter throughout the week at Torch McMahon. So that's
fantastic.
All I got. That's where I'm at.
Mike, thanks a bunch. Wade, once again, will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later, running on tonight's show. The Wade Keller Hotline, pwtorch.com/goVIP if you want to check out VIP membership. And as I said at the top, loads and loads of content all the time, but especially these last couple days, some really good reporting from a lot of different sources, and you can check it out as VIP members, pwtorch.com/goVIP. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, and you can go VIP, and you can listen to my weekly VIP audio show on the Canvas on the artistry of wrestling. Last week we did a lot of preview shows because there was a lot of big events last week. So we did All Out and we did Clash of the Castle and just talked about kind of the art of the build to those shows. But the root of that show is just talking about the art of wrestling. So we'll take a weekly current event and just discuss it from an art perspective and just kind of leave it at that. So you can go VIP and check that out. Also, make sure you guys are heading to YouTube and checking out the new content that gets posted there every single day. We relaunched the channel back in March and just been getting a ton of great momentum. Tyler Sage is a big contributor. Robert Vallejos has some stuff on the page. I've got some stuff. Wade's got some stuff. There's a handful of interviews with a lot of impact talents and some really good coverage of the last 3 days as well. So head over to YouTube, check us out, like the videos, subscribe to the channel would be a really big help. You can follow the brand on social media at PW Torch. That's at PW Torch. And you can follow me on social media at Z Hadorn Torch. That's at Z H E Y D O R N Torch. Mike, my friend, it's a kind of a historic show to do in a lot of ways, and glad we're able to connect on a show here. It's been a long time coming, but thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm already looking forward to the next one.
Awesome.
Hopefully
awesome.
On a less eventful week. But
yes, hopefully at a time where we can actually maybe talk storylines, maybe about some of the matches.
Yeah.
maybe we'll see. Very good. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. For Mike, I am Zach, and we'll catch you guys next time.